Janeway, Spock's beard, Locke is acting very weird, Captain Pike, Sisko's wife, Klingons and the afterlife, Boimler, Tendi's dog, Ransom is very hot, Spore Drive, Black Alert, Giorgio has gone berserk. He's a bad left, Edward is an idiot, Spock is dead, Worf is wet, Chekhov's wearing red. Data's cat, Kempak's at, Q has had enough of that, beam me up, make it so, everybody let's go.
We hung about this series, you can join us live by picking up your phone now. We talk about this series, we're coming to you on your streaming services now. We talk about this series,
well, good evening, Trekkies and Trekkers around the globe. It is Thursday, July 20th, 2023. It is 7:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time. That means we are live. That means you can let your fingers do the walking and call Trek Talk and pick up your phone and dial 646-668-2433 and join in the fun. And we're going to have lots of fun tonight. We're going to be talking about last week's episode of Star Trek, Strange New World, Charade, and it's going to be a blast. We also have Star Trek news, Star Trek birthdays, fan shout-outs, and fan scores. But before we dive right in, I want to go around the room and introduce to you guys each and every one of my awesome Trekspurts. And we'll start out, we're going to go all the way out to Las Vegas, and we're going to say hello to Charles. How you doing tonight, Charles?
I'm making sure I keep myself cool. Sorry about
you're
being
a cool
like your cat. The cat's trying to be cool, coming to visit me, but we're both trying to stay cool. I'm hoping it's nice and cool up there in Portland. It only got up to 111 so far today.
Ugh. But it makes me want to throw up in my mouth. I mean,
gross.
Horrific. Yeah, no, thank you.
If you've heard about the weather conditions that Phoenix has got, we're maybe 5 degrees cooler than Phoenix. So we're up to the point that we're getting that same – we're part of that big high that they're getting also. So we got a scorcher.
Move here, Charles.
Wow. You can come up here to Vermont. You won't have to worry about that ever. We just get floods and tornadoes.
I think it's worth you doing, Charles, just because – it's worth doing, Charles, because then you would just if only that to make Jim not be able to say trifecta anymore. He has to come up with a new word. Four of us were here. He could be my Portland quat lose, he could call it, right? He'll have to invent a whole new name. That's entertaining enough to justify the hassle of you moving. So
agreed.
We'll vote on it at the end of the show.
Well, you know, speaking of Portland, we do have a hat trick out there in Portland tonight. We'll start off with David the Donut Guy. How you doing, David?
Pretty good. Just made some homemade hamburgers. That was pretty nice. And now I'm drinking it down with my homemade water, so I'm pretty good.
Homemade water?
That's not the image I have in mind, man. I only know how to make homemade water one way, David.
I know, me too.
You're not supposed to eat.
Are you in a prison in Eastern Oregon? Is that what's going on?
Don't drink it.
Yeah.
Don't do it, man.
And it's David, the human filter. Yes.
That's what my son
called
me.
We also have out in Portland as well, our very own toy guy, Paul. How you doing tonight, Paul?
You know, Jim, I'm doing really well, really, really well in a lot of good ways. But I'm super preoccupied, man, because it is, as many of our listeners may know, it is Comic-Con weekend. It is San Diego Comic-Con. And stuff got cracking and rolling last night, and the sheer volume of toy previews hitting social media is almost impossible to keep up with. I've seen some really cool stuff and hasn't even really got up to full speed yet until tomorrow. So it's just been crazy. So I'm like, it's dangerous for a guy like me, dude, when you see all this potential stuff you're going to have to acquire. So, and yes, friends, much of it is Star Trek related. So some of which showed up on our Facebook page last night, if I'm not mistaken. It's right. So that's queuing you up for your inevitable Facebook Trek Talk and webpage plug, Jim. So, but I'm good now, to answer your question in the most long-winded way I can.
You're not drinking that homemade water, are you? You're staying away from that.
No, dude. We the only liquid in this house we're allowed to drink by a very small state law that only applies to this property is beer. So that's we don't drink anything
strict
else.
Laws.
Yeah. So weird historical thing in our when we took over the property. It's like we had to abide by those rules to close the sale. So it's not my doing.
Well, I heard that you occasionally crack open a Klingon blood wine from time to time.
You hear correctly, sir. You know, there's an exception to every rule, Jim, which is, you know, why life's so interesting. But
this is very, very true. And wrapping up our hat trick from Portland, we have our very own Eric. How you doing tonight, Eric?
Oh, man, I am also having a fantastic day today. It was one of those days that felt very satisfying on the work front, and then I got home just in time for the podcast. You know, typically there's a little chit-chat before the podcast here and there, and typically I show up within about 30 seconds of the start of the podcast. I showed up 2 minutes before the podcast today, guys, so I'm moving in the right direction,
You're moving on up. That's where you're going, to a deluxe apartment in the sky high.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
All right, guys. Well, we like to start off every week's podcast by giving fan shout outs to you guys, our faithful listeners, our global Star Trek family. And how, you ask, you become a member of our global Star Trek family? Eric, why don't you let our listeners know how they can be mentioned in a future fan shout-out and join our global Star Trek family?
Well, you know, Jim, we have built a veritable Facebook empire with Trek Talking here, and we, in fact, have almost 150,000 followers there and a whole bunch of people like us as well, and that is your way to get in touch with us. And if you don't remember, you know, how to go to Facebook and do a search, it's a lot easier to just go to trektalking.com, and we have a little link there that you can click on, takes you right to our Facebook page. And on that Facebook page, you can look at the top of the page, and we often will just have a post pinned right there that says, where are you from? You'll see a little Vulcan hand symbol there. And if you interact with us on that particular post, you can show up in the fan shout-outs here. Jim likes to pick folks from all over the planet, don't you, Jim?
Yeah, if you just say, hi, my name is Jack, I'm from Portland, you probably won't get chosen. But I'm attracted with emojis. Lots of emojis will probably get you mentioned.
And you can
pretty much
mention anything Klingon-related that will also get you mentioned.
Yes, that's a guarantee. Another way is to be a top fan. If you're a top fan, that also gets you mentioned. So there's a lot of ways to get mentioned. But
Or live near New York.
Yes.
That's true.
Yes.
My name is Walter, and I shave with a bat lift, and I'm from Poughkeepsie. If you fit that definition, you're going to be picked, I guarantee you.
You're there. You're there. Yeah, absolutely. But I'll tell you what, though, the one way that you won't get picked is if you don't visit our Facebook page. So that's a prerequisite. You need to go there.
Darn it.
You got to start there, and, you know, the rest will just unfold. I have a feeling that once you get there, you won't want to leave anyways, because there's all kinds of great stuff there. But at any rate, you want to look for a heart next to your name from yours truly, Uncle Jim. I'll send you a heart all the way from Vermont. It might be waterlogged by the time it gets to you, but I will send you a heart, and then you want to tune into the next podcast and hear your name mentioned for all the world to hear. So, Eric, who's on your fan shout-out list for this week?
Well, for our number one fan shout out this week, we are heading over to Poland and we're saying hello and kapla to Dorota Petrik, who says, live long and prosper to us, and sends us a little Polish flag there. So representing, Dorota, thank you so much for listening to our podcast and for supporting us on our Facebook page. We really appreciate it. Live long and prosper, peace and long life to you. Also saying hello this week to top fan Robert Burke, who's saying hello to us from Ireland, one of those places that I have nary been that I would like to go very muchly. So Robert, maybe you can make some recommendations. Where should I start? Lots to see and do, lots to eat and drink. Where should I get started? Thank you so much for listening to our podcast. Also saying hello to top fan Martin Mulligan, who's saying hello to us from around the way in Scotland. Martin, I always wondered if, you know, how do Scottish people feel about Scotty? Do they just call him normal and they call everyone else like American Jim, American Spot? I have no idea. There's got to be some sort of synergy there. At any rate, the Highlands of Scotland look amazing. Martin Mulligan, thank you so much for saying hello to us. Hello to you, sir. And lastly on my list, David Woodall is saying hello to us from Christchurch, New Zealand, way down in the other hemisphere. David Woodall, thank you so much for listening to us. Live long and prosper to you. And I'm going to pass this big old shout-out megaphone over to Charles. Charles, who you got?
Well, let's start off with a greetings to Kirk Henry. Used to be in Maryville, now in Kansas City, Missouri, and gives us a nice United States flag. Greetings to top fan Bob Hancock from Oklahoma. I have another top fan, Diane Condi from Houston, Texas. Greetings, Diane. Hope it's cool down there. And a greeting to another top fan, Evelyn Duane Froy from Jacksonville, North Carolina. David, who's on your list?
Yeah, I got a couple of people here. First, I would like to say hello and thank you for listening. Is Rachel Sattler from New Jersey. Oh, no, she said New Jersey girl, now living in Richmond, Virginia, USA. Next one is Liz Zakin from Texas, USA. Top fan Sue LaPointe, all the way from Michigan. Last on my list is another top fan, Fayetta Susan from Kentucky. Thank you all for all listening. And Paul, who's on your list?
All right, man. It looks like we are going to blast off and leave the United States and go to points farther afield. First of all, I'd like to give an enormous shout-out and a great big kapla to our friend Nikki Holt, top fan Nikki Holt in South Africa. Magnificent spot to hang your hat. Great to hear from you all the way down there, Nikki. Hope things are well and it's not too hot this time of year. Moving a little further north, we're going to say hello to Ana Sai in Gran Canaria Islands, Spain. Gran Canaria, as they say. Wonderful, exotic place to live. Well, Spain is just nothing. Can anything top it? One of the most amazing destinations in the world. Absolutely amazing. What a place to live. What a place to be a Star Trek fan. And if you like your temperatures a little bit cooler, a little bit more Nordic, then go visit our friend Jacqueline Hani in Bern, Switzerland. I'm guessing there's at least three or four pairs of skis in Jacqueline's house because Bern is a massive ski destination. And just down the road, it's our good friend Remco Sikkens in Zandvoort, the Netherlands there. Remco Sikkens, it's great to hear from you, all of our friends in Europe and all over the globe. Together we share many things in common, but we share a lot of enthusiasm for all things Star Trek. Isn't that right, Uncle Jim?
Absolutely, and we're going to continue that on. I have four top fans, which means they interact on our Facebook page, they take place in our polls, and they're just general Trekkies all around. So I want to start off by saying thank you and kapla to Lance B. Rubin, who's from East Meadow, Long Island, New York. I wonder if Lance went to Trek Long Island last year or is planning on going this year. If you do, Lance, look me up and I'll make it worth it. We have another top fan. We have Doreen Kopp Campbell, who's from Annapolis, Maryland, USA, and sends us an American flag. Live long and prosper, Doreen. We also have another top fan, Maggie Hunter Giraffe from Maine, U.S. of A., the home of Stephen King. And the last top fan on my list is Sharon Mame Rosenberg, who's listening to us in Illinois, U.S. of A. Thank you so much to each and every one of you guys for listening, no matter where you are. And hopefully you will be featured on a fan shout-out in the future. Just head over to our Facebook page and leave lots of emojis to catch my attention, and hopefully you'll be mentioned. All right, guys, this is it. This is what we've all been waiting for. We reworked the show a little bit to get our episode reviews at the top of the show instead of the bottom of the show. So this is it. We're going to be talking about last week's Strange New Worlds episode, Charades. And if you haven't seen it, here's just a little reminder.
Mr. Spock, what's happened to me?
You're in a shuttle accident.
Seems to have made you human.
What the? I feel different.
Don't you get it?
Angry. Hungry?
I'd slow down a bit if I were you.
I'm making up for lost time.
We're working on a cure.
If we can't change him back, he's gonna be stuck like this.
Do I smell more human?
I don't know. This is a radio. I don't know how you smell. Anyways, every Friday, I put up a post on our page and ask you guys, our faithful listeners and our Facebook followers, to tell us what you thought about last week's episode. And again, the more detailed and the more creative that you are, the better chance that your comment has of being read online. If you just say, hey, it was cool, I want a little bit more than that. Why was it cool? So we ask you guys to score the episode on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being the best. Any scores over 10 are counted as 10. All right, just so that we're all on the same page there.
a 100 will do you no
so none
good.
Of your wise cracking, 10.5 if you're one of those
we can't
people.
Do a 10 gold.
10.9, 10.11.
That's right. It counts as a 10.
So you have a 10 hole.
So you can give it 10 stars, though. Which has happened, actually happened. So, Eric, what do our Facebook fans have to say about Charades?
Oh, my gosh, you guys, I'm going to sound a little bit like a broken record, but there are some great little nuances in some of these comments. So Nora Leverson gave it a 10 and 10 stars. All of it was brilliant. Spock's encounter with Amanda from his very first human greeting to her to the end was brilliant. The rest of the cast showing their cohesion as a crew by supporting Spock and Chapel. They can all say so much with an expression, particularly Anson Mount and Babs Alusonmakun. The character work done in this show and the series has been the best since Deep Space Nine. Bam! Mic drop, Nora. Thank you so much. Top
yeah,
fan, Catherine. Yeah.
I actually had to go and count those stars to make sure
well,
they were 10. And
I counted them as well. And, I count, if a star is times 1, then I count 10 times 10 as a 100. So I think Nora gave it a 100, actually. But, of course, that is averaged and rounded down to 10. So thanks, Nora. All the stars provided an awful lot of joy. Top fan Catherine V. Perillo said 9. Nothing gets a 10. But it was wonderful. I loved how Spock finally was able to relate to his mother, Amanda. I'm thrilled to see him actually telling her that he has feelings for her. I know. Gave me the warm fuzzies too, Catherine. Thank you so much. Rebecca Carew said a 10. I waited 50-plus years for this episode. Oh, that's so sweet. David Liltonk Armstrong said an easy 10 with an exclamation point and probably one of the best episodes throughout the two seasons. Tons of funny moments and great character cohesion. Ethan Peck was impeccable in pulling off the human for the first time experience. Even the small digs were hilarious. Loved the attitude that Kirkovians, is that what they were called, gave. You called me. Yeah, hilarious. Thanks, David. I agree. Paul Dunlap gave it a 10 because it's one of the few Trek episodes in any series that I know my wife would love to watch with me. That is an absolute reason to give it a 10, Paul. Sinead Hull says, has to be a 10. My favorite Strange New World so far, and really the ensemble cast do humor brilliantly. It brought such joy. Top fan Corey Cloud gave it a 9.5. Great character development episode and hilarious. Top fan Richard Chang said definitely a 10, probably because I'm a hopeless romantic. Emoji with little hearts swarming around it. I also loved how Spock defended his mom, Amanda, and finally understood the prejudice she experienced from T'Pril and the other Vulcans. Thanks, Rich. Frieda Perry Stelzer gave it a 9. I loved it. Spock has always been a favorite of mine, and to see the character evolve in Strange New Worlds is wonderful. Helen Williamson said 10, loved the acting, showed a comedic side to Ethan's ability, which otherwise he wouldn't get a chance to do. I bet he loved it. I bet he did, Helen. Top fan Aaron Aiken said, I'm going with a 7. The premise of the episode was good, but, and I say this making it very clear that I'm not one of those it's an alternate timeline people, it is kind of weird how they're retconning altering the Spock Chapel thing. I'm fine with all the changes to keep things current, push things forward, but this particular interpersonal relationship is just a wee bit odd. Aaron, I think we should talk about that. So thank you so much for your comment there. Top fan Tammy Buss said 10 exclamation point. My husband said that Spock was like a teenager trying to get a handle on his hormones and that Spock was going to run and get his My Chemical Romance t-shirt pretty soon if he didn't get fixed. Awesome, Tammy. Thank you. Top fan Nin Romersama said, this episode gets a solid 8.5 from me. T'Pring was the star of the evening to me. She was truly wounded by Spock and couldn't understand why he acted the way he did. He felt shame, understandable, but wouldn't a mind meld have given her all the info? Yes, it would. And his feelings for Chapel to his fiancée, so I understand why he didn't suggest that. Her pain, that's T'Pring's, was palpable. Chapel's line was also every strong strongly emotionally driven. Lastly, I love that it was Uhura Ortega's and Chapel who drove off to save Spock, but not in the sense of girl power. What one almost comes to expect these days, but merely that the best in their fields who can help Spock happen to be women. I totally agree. Pike was relegated to an almost comedic, but not slapstick role, and Anson Mount just nailed it. The camaraderie between the crew was obvious to me, and could easily believe them all to be a single crew who have worked together for years. Last week felt a bit annoying at times, but this one was very, very good. Thank you, Nim. Christoph Swarsky said an 8. It's definitely the best one of the season, but the goofy customer service aliens blew the whole thing. They could have brought back Benjamin Sisko to do a tie-in to the ascended beings who inhabited the Beta Quadrant wormhole. Such a potential wasted. Mike Howell gave it a 9.5, only because I believe Ad Astra Per Aspera is one of the best episodes of any Star Trek series. Cannot disagree with you, Mike. Top fan Timothy Bernard said, I go with an 8.5. Spock was just hilarious being a human, especially him saying, what the F? Him interacting with the crew as a human was great as he has now experienced the full spectrum of emotions. He really should have told T'Pring what was going on, though. But Christine finally admitting how she feels about Spock and that ending, sucks that we're already halfway through the season, but I'm looking forward to the rest of the episodes. Top fan Mary M. Hutchinson said 10, Peck was hilarious. Gordon Clay said 9, the way that Pike was inarticulate in explaining the Kevorkians how they mishandled Spock's DNA was sitcom level. It's like suddenly he couldn't understand the most obvious mix-up and just tell them Spock is half-human, half-Vulcan, not fully human. He only needed one sentence to state the obvious, but for some mysterious reason, the guy who always knows what to say couldn't find the words. Other than that, I love the whole episode. Thanks, Gordon. John K. Underly said 10 out of 10. This episode really gets into the development of the TOS subplot of Chapel and Spock and sets the stage for Muck Time, maybe? Maybe I'm getting old, but I don't remember any real backstory being developed in TOS until this episode of Strange New Worlds. Isn't it cool to have so much Trek that we have to use three-letter codes to delineate them. Totally agree, John. Thank you so much. Top fan Adam Hayes said 100, but sorry, Adam, you're being downgraded to a 10. Top fan Sean Jr. said a solid 11, also a 10. This episode had me in stitches. Top fan Brian Weeks said, I'd go with a 9. The snippy fart cloud portal aliens were the only detractors. At least they finally did right by Spock in the end. Fan score this week, gentlemen, of 9.4, which so far as I understand is actually our highest fan score this entire season, 1/10 of a point above Ad Astra per Aspera. So what you got, Charles, for some backstory on this one?
Well, this was an interesting one to come up with some cadet training. I left out quite a few, and I'm sure people can find all kinds of tie into this one if you look hard enough. Let's kind of look at Spock and Chapel. TOS, The Naked Time, Season 1, Episode 4. Amok Time, Season 2, Episode 1. Plato's Stepchildren, Season 3, Episode 10. And, of course, Strange New World, Spock Amok, Season 1, Episode 5. You'll definitely see a lot of connections of Chapel's feelings for Spock. Of course, we can't forget T'Pring, which, of course, we recognize her from Amok Time. Season 2, Episode 1. This is a fun little screenshot that's a mem that's floating around there. TOS is Turnabout Intruder, Season 3, Episode 24. When you see Sam raise his hands up in defense, that was the same pose that Kirk had in that episode. TOS's Journey to Babel, Season 2, Episode 10. We get to see Amanda. We've also learned the fact that Spock is not talking to Sarek in a long period of time. And while we're on that same top discovery, Will You Take My Hand, Season 1, Episode 15. Such Sweet Sorrow, Part 2. Season 2, Episode 14, are going to give you examples of Amanda Grayson, Spock's mother. So I guess we might want to actually talk about this episode.
Yeah, and Charles, you know what I'll do? I feel it's fair to, even though last week was really the Cage Connection episode with the sort of emotional Spock connection, I would slide the Cage into there just a little bit too, because we get the smiles, right?
Yeah. I think you also get Naked – I think it's Naked Time where you get a slightly emotional Spock also.
Drug-induced emotional Spock.
Yeah, but you're still – yeah.
No, you're right. You're totally right.
There are definitely some hints of Spock sometimes in his emotions.
Well, and they say in Naked Time, don't they say that it's actually – it takes away their inhibitions, right? So there you go.
And don't forget this side of paradise where he falls in love with that blonde woman there.
Also drug-induced,
well, those were fours.
Yeah. Well, as we said, we've gotten
drugs.
Stolen.
Just stay away from the drugs.
There's so many TOS episodes we could tie in. We just don't have time to tie them all in.
It's true.
See, David, why don't we put the spotlight on you and get this whole train a rolling tonight?
Okay. this particular episode, I was a little bummed out on, but I don't know. I guess I have to watch it a second time, which I kind of forgot to do. But the I was a little pushed back a little bit, taken aback, I guess you could say, with this whole emotional Spock. I guess now hearing the history of all the TOS episodes that I completely forgot about, it kind of makes sense of why he is the way he is, I suppose. But, yeah, he did a really good job. I commend him for that. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. It's kind of hard to explain. I don't know. I guess I really don't have a lot to say, except I always find that the father of that T'Pring Vulcan guy was a little awkward.
I loved him.
Well, he was totally subservient to the mom. I mean, I think that was the thing. He was like, I have an opinion, and the wife was like, I have an opinion, and he was like, I agree with my wife's opinion.
Yeah, I am pretty sure that Vulcan couple lives on the Vulcan equivalent of the Upper West Side. I think he's like he teaches a grad course in English at Columbia, and yep. You know, it's just they were hilarious. They were almost like Seinfeld or Larry David characters. Those two,
oh my god,
right?
They so much were.
And I mean that in a really good way.
Yeah, no, great.
You know,
yeah.
I have more to say about that. Initially, you're like, you know, I mean, because it's, I think sometimes, and it's interesting, the show is, its effect on us, right, is sometimes we still have to go, wait a second, because there is so much more comedy often on Strange New Worlds than we're used to, right? Even in a serious episode, they kind of go for it a lot. And these are really broadly drawn kind of satirical representations of like Vulcans, but you know, at the end of the day, right, they went with the whole what's the through line, right? Oh my god, your future in-laws. I mean, it has been a joke of, you know, grief for people for I don't know what, 3,000 years or so, right? The idea of like, oh my god, my in-laws, right? And they went with that in this case,
you know. Paul, the only thing that they could have done to make that better is if he had said to her, yes, dear.
I would have lost it. But yeah.
You know, when he bites in the appetizer, this is delicious. And then he's like, oh, I didn't. It's like he's chastised, yeah. You know. It's like,
I think he's
she's
a
Romulan
agent in training.
Yeah, the wife is definitely the one wearing the thing that will not get me in trouble. By saying she seems to be the more dominant personality in the relationship.
There
Let's
you
just
go.
Say that. So yeah,
there you go.
Got the
I don't want to date myself too badly. Yeah, but
well, she,
but hilarious, hilarious. I mean,
and she dropped it. She dropped a little Easter egg, which to me was something that I noticed. She talks about when she's talking to Spock and sort of dressing him down about all the, you know, problems that he has, which apparently is part of a pre-marriage ritual, which I think is hilarious. You get a chance to sort of tell the other person what you really think about him. T'Pril points out that there are other Vulcan men who would happily take Spock's place. And to me, that is totally talking about Staan, right?
Staan yeah,
from
totally.
TOS, yeah. So that's
and
cool because
forget,
we saw him, yeah.
Staan is hanging out with Cybok right now. So,
yes.
You know.
Staan and Cybok.
Let's not forget Cybok. But before,
yeah, when
before
are they going to be putting that guy in?
Before we go too far, though, David, what was your score before we forget?
Oh, man. If I would have saw it the second time, I probably would have gotten it a little higher. But for some reason, 7 is screaming at me right now. I'm giving it a 7, yeah.
Interesting, David.
7 and no decimal?
Yeah, this is 7.
0.0.
0.0.
Okay, 7.0. Well, I got to say, you know, I heard of a lot of fans complaining that where's Captain Pike? He's not in it, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it makes me laugh because
fans complaining, that's so unusual.
It's weird, man. I've never heard of that.
Fans complaining. I've never encountered that ever. That's so strange.
They complain that Michael Burnham does everything every week and solves every problem. So they don't like Discovery because of that. And then
you know why that is, right, man?
Strange New World, and they're like complaining because Pike isn't solving everything and doing everything. So it's like, what is the deal here, people?
I know what my life experience has been, Jim. If you want something done, ask a woman and it'll get done.
Yes, dear.
It'll get done. It'll get done. You may end up doing more of it than you ever dreamed of, but it will get done. I promise you. Dudes talk a lot, but we don't always perform, man. If you want something done, a dicey situation, I'm actually driving around the men, and I'm asking the women. I mean, that's the way it is in my workplace. If I want to depend on somebody being actually – sorry, gentlemen, but, you know, we've only got like 2,000 years of this behavior as evidence behind us.
what you got to do is you have to unplug it and plug it back in. Mm-hmm. That'll fix it.
Have you tried turning it off and on again?
I enjoyed this episode. I think I was with David. I was kind of like, why? But what won me over? Well, not won me over. I enjoyed it. But what pushed me over the edge was Amanda. And when Amanda showed up, first of all, tying Amanda to Discovery, forget about this alternate timeline garbage. Here she is, okay? So stop that. So that anytime they use someone from Discovery, I'm like, great. Let's see some Laurel show up sometime maybe. But at any rate, so I thought Amanda was great. But the thing that really won me over was the reverse discrimination angle with Amanda and the Vulcans discriminating against humans. That won me right over. I was like, you know, that put it right up there with Ad Astra Aspera for me. It was just the opposite of that. And it was just like, you know, what Spock says to her when she finds out he's human and he takes off the fake ears and she just got done dressing him down that a human could never do that, and you're disabled and you have disabilities and like popped off the ears. Guess what, lady? I'm human, you know? I loved it. That put me over the edge. And another one of our viewers mentioned the Spock telling his mother how he felt about her. That got me all gushy. I was like, wow, this is awesome. That scene put it over the top for me. Spock eating bacon? Come on. You know, I was like, he's just eating it all. And Pike's like, don't you think you should slow down? He's like, I'm making up for lost time. And he's just shoving the bacon in, you know. And then he's talking about, do I smell? Human smell, do I smell? Ethan Peck just nailed it. He nailed it. He hit it out of the park in this one. He's such a great actor. And he every scene that he was in was top notch. And his interactions with Chapel, you know, were great as well. I mean, the whole thing, the alien people there, the Kirkovs,
Kirkovians.
Kirkovians? I'm like, Kirkoids. Wait a second. There's a Vulcan moon with this ancient civilization hanging out there, and the Vulcans never checked it out. No one ever checked it out. No one ever went there until Spock crashed a shuttle into it. You know, food for thought. But overall, I got to say, I loved it. I loved everything about it. I watched it 3 times, and I love the Vulcan husband. He just steals the show for me, you know. He wants to play charades. He wants to eat all the food. He was great. So for me, I'm going with the 10.10.
Average down to a 10.
Average down to a 10.
Rein him in. Rein him in, folks. Rein him in.
So that's my take on it. How about you, Charles?
Charles, you're on mute. Charles, you're on mute.
This is like when you're waiting for the transmission to come back from Mars, right?
There we go.
Yeah,
right.
I'm on mute. Was trying to be quiet so the cat didn't disrupt us. I think it's the first time we've really gotten to see Ethan Peck get his comical side out. He could be funny. I think the fact of just straight through, we go from even his reaction when the ladies talk about how to speak, And he's like, I speak like that? It's like, you do. So the friends got to have a little fun with Spock. Our little alien crew kind of gave me a little bit of a similarity to the group of aliens we had in Discovery, which was an interesting group of aliens. We talked about, oh, well, we wanted to go someplace and see something new. Okay, we found a new group. I'm not sure why the Vulcans hadn't researched this, but maybe the Vulcan Science Department was a little too busy trying to find a few new students to add to their collective. So I thought Chapel's determination and how we're showing how she reacts against Spock, how she enjoys but isn't sure how to deal with the human Spock. But we got a good, interesting side of Chapel this time via what her feelings towards Spock is and her determination to help him as far as she can. And I'm sure everybody else has got a few more ideas they can throw in on this one. I'm going to jump up to about 9.5 on this one. Not quite a 10, but I think it's up there.
Well, that's pretty respectable. You got the decimal in there, which I wasn't allowed to do, but that's okay. How about you, Eric?
Wow. Yeah, I totally dug on this episode. All of the stuff that you guys have already touched on, I thought was great. You know, Amanda and the cool energy aliens that sounded like a really friendly AI or something. I don't know. I love the way that they talked. It was kind of like matter of fact, which I appreciate in my aliens. It was a fun episode. You know, it wasn't very deep, but I felt like it had some good character development. It had some good like character moments, which made it really, really fun to watch. So in the end, I was left just feeling good, like I had fun watching an episode of Star Trek, which I totally like. Plus, there were just plenty of Easter eggs. I mean, you're looking around at TOS connections and stuff like that. You know, Chapel talking about Corby's three poles, and you know, you'll remember that in What Little Girls Are Made Of, there's like a romantic interest between Chapel and Corby. So there was that sort of connection. There was the fact that the Kirkovians, like you were saying, Jim, you know, being around a Vulcan moon that was around the Vulcan star was kind of interesting. And I felt like they could almost wedge that in there somehow, so it didn't really bug me too much. I also absolutely noticed right away that green tunic that Pike was wearing, you know, the one with the little sideways Starfleet emblem at the belt, which was very reminiscent of Kirk from some episode, I don't know, in the original series. I definitely remember seeing that, though. And then there was even a Star Trek Enterprise connection, because you'll remember that T'Pol in Enterprise is the first one to talk about how Vulcans use nasal suppressants around humans to keep the stink down. So it was cool that they brought that back as well. I want to leave something. I just want to mention one other thing, though. The whole, like, knit cap thing, like what Spock did in Star Trek IV to hide his ears. But in this case, Spock was hiding that he didn't have pointed ears. So that just kind of felt like a fun sort of callback to a moment in Star Trek history. So at any rate, I loved this episode. Like I said, it made me feel good when I watched it, and I love episodes that kind of step outside the box just a little bit. You know, I love the one from season one, which I always forget the name of, but the sort of theater one with M'Benga as the king and his daughter and all that sort of stuff. I love it when Star Trek takes that risk and goes out there and tells a cool story, maybe even outside the sort of believable Star Trek spacey genre, you know, science fiction genre. So What will I give this one? I feel like this episode deserves a 9. Like, it didn't do anything profound for me, but I had an absolutely amazing time watching it. So I'll give it a solid 9.
Well, Paul, you get to bring up the caboose. You've heard what everyone else thinks. And
all right,
you get
man.
To
thank
wrap
you.
It all up for us and bring this bad boy home.
All right. Well, I'm going to join in, gang, and also confide that I really enjoyed the hell out of this episode, especially in the wake of last week's previous one, you know, the that we discussed at length.
Yeah, the four.
This was just a breath of fresh air, right? There's a few minutes where you get the bends at the first because it's such a change of tone, and it is just a real emphasis on comedy, right? Which they really go for. I mean, they really, you know, set it out there. And I think one of the things that's great is, as Charles and everyone else has pointed out, you know, it's really a great showcase to see what other kinds of things that Ethan Peck can do. I mean, he did a terrific job. I mean, he walked right up to the glass of being over the top with his, you know, demonstrations of the different emotions, right? But he never crossed the line and went too far. Like when he's yelling at George Kirk, he's just completely out of control. It was great.
I will break you.
Even with the bacon thing, it's just like, it's almost too much, right? But it's just like he managed to sell it, and it was really great. I don't know how many takes that they had to do to find the right tone, but they really did. And I think
how much bacon did he eat?
Yeah, exactly. But he did a great job, right? I mean, I'm agreeing. It's just the whole, you know, the in-laws vibe was just great, right? We talked about that. It's just classic New York style comedy that I am a big fan of. You know, it's like a weird sci-fi episode of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, right? That's you know what I felt like we were getting into a little bit there, but super entertaining I would say, I don't want to get the wrong vibe here at all. The only thing that initially threw me for a bit of a loop that I just think is just, you know, you just got to accept it, right? But and I know she's played the character before for 8 episodes on Discovery, so it's no shock there. But I think Mia Kirshner, as wonderful as she is just not, I think she's kind of miscast as Amanda Grayson, right? She's only 11 years older than Ethan Peck, right? And I think she just looks too young to be a mother of this, you know, 30-year-old dude, right? I just think she looks too young. And please don't get me wrong or throw me off the show for this, okay? Please don't misunderstand me. I love boobs. Okay, I do. I'm a big fan. But she just looked ridiculous with this, you know, bustier pushing her boobs up where they're practically, you know, against her chin, like she's in some Elizabethan bodice ripper. I'm like, what the hell? I mean, it was just preposterous looking. Really weird choice of costuming there. So I found the Amanda character a little off. I mean, she did a great performance, though. And by the time they do the scene where, you know, Spock's actually able to say, to confide his feelings to her, I think that the tone was good, but I just, you know, I'm ready to go with it. I'm ready to accept that this is this reality, this show's version of Amanda. But I think she's just miscast. I think she's just too young, and which is meant as a compliment, you know, show me an actress that doesn't want to be accused of being too young. I don't think you can find one. It definitely makes me wonder if we're going to be seeing Sarek again in the near future, right? Because here we are. So I think we're super curious. I know Jim is super curious to see that other Vulcan, whose name we won't mention. But way more
starts
interested
with
in
an,
seeing.
Starts with an starts, S, ends with yeah, Bok.
Reminds with, rhymes with Minoc. I'm way more interested in having Sarek come back because I think that those family dynamics, the whole business between fathers and sons, and you know, Spock's a great vehicle for exploring anybody who has mixed parentage in their life. You know, be they two different bits of parentage, however you want to do that, from a race perspective, from a religious perspective, however you want to approach it. What they did here, where they basically extracted one half of that duality out of the character, is a great way for a lot of people to find ways to relate to those circumstances in their life, right? And you know, great allegory. I think the reason it worked so well and didn't come across as being preachy is because they chose to do it in a comedic, satirical way. So it gives you a lot more freedom to explore those things, and then people, you know, be less uncomfortable. So I think it was a really smart choice. We were super critical of the writing on the show last week. I'm just the opposite this particular week. I think the writing on this one was super, super, super strong. One of our fans was commenting about the customer service aliens. I thought that was an hilarious way of identifying, because they were. It was like, I'm going to put you on hold because it's like, you know, you don't need to call us back. It's like, it was an odd choice, but, you know, it's just, maybe that's just how they chose to interpret, you know. I mean, if aliens were to look at us, I will share this with you gentlemen after the show. But I saw this thing, somebody asked an AI what people look like in each of the 50 states. It's one of the most disturbing and accurate things I've ever seen in my life. I mean, it's just horrific. So it's just like, if aliens did decide to like probe us and say, what do we need to frame up to interact with humans? They probably would have chosen something really weird. Like that. The one thing and I'll just give you my score real quick. I'd give this absolutely a 9 without question. This is a 9 episode. Really, really strong and really evokes good feelings and makes you, reminds you yet again how really great this cast is. I mean, everyone's like, why isn't Pike doing more? Well, you know, I think he's doing just fine, but he's the anchor of an ensemble. This is an ensemble show, clearly, and everyone rotates through and gets their time to shine, right? And as does Pike. So, you know, get hung up on that is what I would say. What's really interesting, and I'm still thinking about it myself, right? Because I don't know that I'm not a big adherent slave to canon at all. I think everybody should have their own freedom to try and spin stuff out there. But wow, that ending was a cannon buster big time, right? I mean, really. I mean, old school TOS, it was always unrequited love, right? She was always somebody who admired him from afar. They'd never had any kind of anything in the
past. Was
that
specifically defined, though, or could it have just been that, like, what we saw in TOS was sexual tension post the things that happened here?
I feel like when she at one point says to him, I'm in love with you, Mr. Spock, in the original series, that she is saying that to him for the first time. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any misinterpreting that line reading at all. It's something that she's been holding inside of her and she's been afraid to confess for years, right? And she's finally, you know, got the bravery to just say it. And Majel's not with us to confirm that line reading, but that's what I've always got it. And I've seen it a jillion times. I think most people would agree. But so it is really different to go down this road and sort of, you know, push the cannon off the deck of the ship, if you will, which is what they did, really. And I think that that's okay. I think that every generation gets its own thing. I don't think it's really good to be slavishly adherent to dogma in any way, shape, or form, okay? I'm not a guy that thinks that we should, you know, follow what the founding fathers, you know, said about, you know, firearms, because they would have been terrified by a refrigerator. So I don't think this is, you know, how we should be slavishly, you know, enthralled to the past as a rule book that we must abide by or our heads will explode, right? It's like everything's got to, you know, you got to give some freedom of exploration, right? And I think all that really matters from an audience's perspective watching something new is if it breaks the rules, is suspension of disbelief maintained, right? Do you believe that what you're seeing could happen, maybe? Is it done convincingly so it doesn't seem like totally implausible? Because we see a lot of times stuff that you're like, oh, come on, this would never occur. I can't buy it because of the way it's executed. But on this, I felt that I did buy it, and I feel like those actors sold it to me, and I'm really – it left me not going, oh, God, how dare they have that consummated, you know, attraction spelled out that seems in defiance of TOS, it left me more really curious to see where they go with this, right? Especially where Spock's going to return to, you know, his norm now. And all this stuff is in both of their wakes. You know, the unsaid has been said. And that's really interesting stuff for drama and for comedy as well. So a strong 9 for me, right up there with Ad Astra. I am, you know, I'm kind of, I hope they can maintain the inertia and equilibrium for the rest of the season, because it was really great, really fun for me, and delightfully done. And ready for, Paramount Plus, ready for the spinoff series with Spock's parents. Okay, we're all ready for that.
Well, I just wanted to, it was one thing I wanted to talk to you guys about, and that is this. Do they have replicators on the Enterprise? Because Pike is growing his own herbs. He's got this big flame. He's making bacon. He's making food. Do they have a replicator on this Enterprise, or do they make their own food?
Jim, you heard Pike say, you don't use replicated herbs. You use fresh herbs.
He said that in this episode.
He is still old school. He wants the fresh foods. He doesn't want the replicated. It's his choice.
So they do have a replicator. Yeah. He just chooses not to use it. Yeah.
Yep.
So we're assuming this is not real bacon, though. I mean, from a slaughtered animal, I'm guessing. Probably not.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't think they have pigs running around.
Because this is something that just recently now is starting to come into being in our lives, right? We will be experiencing this in the years, if not months to come. They're now able to grow meat in a lab independent of a living animal. And that's coming. It's actual meat. It's chicken. It's beef. It's whatever it is. But it's lab grown, right? And there's no death involved. There's no slaughter involved. They're just basically growing the meat devoid of, apart from conscious life forms that can be eaten and enjoyed. So there's no guilt. There's no violence. There's none of that. So I'm assuming it's something like that in the future that maybe is where this bacon's coming from. But I'm super excited for that stuff to get here. I know people will freak out and, you know, Soylent Green or whatever, but it's just, you know, come on, let's try it.
And I love the way the Enterprise looks. It's a lot bigger than the TOS Enterprise. I mean, look at the size of Pike's quarters. Look at the size of the engine room. I mean, it's a much larger ship. Appears to be 2023. It's not the 1960s anymore, and I like the new aesthetics of the ship. Like Paul said, even though they don't go with canon, I still like the way the ship looks. They have the nice spacious rooms, and Pike's got a fireplace in there, and he's making bacon, and he's growing herbs, and I like the feel of the ship. It kind of has that TNG Enterprise D like cruise ship feel, and I like that. It doesn't bother me at all that the ship doesn't look exactly like the TOS that's up at Ticonderoga. So I enjoy that.
Gets refitted, and everything got smaller.
Yeah, they've already explained why, because Pike has a crew of 200. And Kirk has a crew of 400, so they cut the size of the ship in half. Canon explanation. All right, so Charles, overall, what is our score, and how does it compare to our fan score?
Actually, this is the third week in a row the fans have topped us. The fans gave us a 9.4. We're at an 8.9.
Wow. That's really?
Because there were no tens in our group. I mean, there were no tens.
What was the lowest score? Who had the lowest
David's.
Score? What
it
was yours again, David?
We're going to blame it on. We're blaming
it's
it on
David's
David.
Fault.
Would you give it a 7?
He loses his.
Yeah.
No more donuts for David.
No way he's supposed to bring the donuts.
Yeah, and so let's not ask David to bring the water either, okay?
He's been drinking too much homemade water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not even Kool-Aid, it's the water.
It's the water. Wah, wah, wah.
I got Portland water. It's not good no more.
No, homemade water, bro.
If you have to chew your water, there's a problem. All right. Well, that wraps up our review of Charades. And I don't even know what is the title of this week's episode. I haven't looked yet.
Lost in Translation.
Okay, Lost in Translation, which is on Paramount Plus right now. We'll be talking about that next week. You can head over to our Facebook page tomorrow morning around 8, 9 o'clock. I'll have the poll up, and you can vote. You can tell us what you thought about the episode on Friday. All right, guys. Well, you know what time it is? It's time for the birthdays.
That was not a Klingon song.
Okay, every week we start out our Star Trek birthdays by remembering those members of our Star Trek family who, sadly enough, are no longer with us. And for that, we turn to Eric.
Yeah, Jim, this week we have six remembrances that we're going to burn through here. The very first is actor Peter Dorea, who we lost back in 2013. He's the actor who portrayed Jose Tyler in the TOS first pilot episode, The Cage, of course, then later edited down to The Menagerie Parts 1 and 2. Peter was the son of veteran actor Dan Dorea, and he actually acted in around 30 films and television guest star roles throughout the 1960s. He was first intended to actually be a regular performer on that Star Trek show from that first initial episode, and he was extremely thrilled, saying a TV series will be good for me so early in my career. But then when Star Trek was recast for its second pilot, Where No Man Has Gone Before, he was devastated because he was dropped from the show at the time. He said, "It knocked me out." He later admitted to the North Adams transcript, he said, "When I lost that role, cried for 2 weeks." But he was not too dejected because he went on later after his sort of acting career. In 1973, he moved to British Columbia with his partner Jan Bryan, and he developed a documentary production company specializing in ecological and social awareness, as well as the Guiding Hands Recreation Society, which is a nonprofit society with the aim of promoting the value of nature. So cool that he sort of showed up in Star Trek, later lost that part, but, you know, through the acting, actually ended up doing some socially conscious stuff. So Peter Dorea, thank you so much for your contributions. Would have had a birthday here on July 14th. Happy birthday. Happy birthday as well to Sid Haig.
Yeah.
I would say a legend. He's the actor who played the first lawgiver in the TOS first season episode, The Return of the Archons. Including his Trek role, Haig appeared in over 350 episodes of various television shows and over 50 films, beginning with the short film The Host in 1960. He also appeared twice in Buck Rogers in the 25th Century, which I always like to mention because Jim loves that stuff. Haig is probably best known for his roles in numerous B-movies and exploitation films, mostly horrors, from the 60s all the way up until now. And he's, you know, appeared in stuff more recently like Rob Zombie stuff, low-budget films like High on the Hog and House of the Dead, Quentin Tarantino's Jackie Brown and Kill Bill 2, T.J. Hooker with William Shatner. What has Sid Haig not been in? He's got that creepy face, and you just know it when you see it, right? Do you want to say anything about Sid here, Paul?
Oh, just that I'm a huge fan, dude. I mean, it is just nuts. I mean, it's just like I love dudes like this. I love actors who just – it seems like they probably never had a day off.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's just nuts. Yeah, I mean, it's just you would see him on everything. He had a million bit roles in, you know, from the late 60s to the, you know, mid 70s, right? A lot of type grindhouse movies, really started to, you know, make his way into things in like the late 70s and early, or excuse me, late 60s and early 70s, where those kind of pictures started to really come into their own in the waves of like blaxploitation pictures, right? He was in THX 1138, by the way, too, for George Lucas.
Yes, he was.
Right?
Yep.
He was in that. He did a Bond movie. He was in Diamonds Are Forever, Beware the Blob. And then, you know, you started to find things like movies like when the blaxploitation movement took off. That's really where he started to become more popular, like movies like Coffee, like with Pam Grier, The Don Is Dead, Shaft, Foxy Brown. I mean, Savage Sisters. I mean, it's just all these great pictures. And then he would show up. You need a bad guy to just show up and intimidate, who you could believe would be scary and intimidating for your hero. $6 Million Man, Rockford Files, that kind of thing. Oh, yeah, you're going to call Sid, right? And he's just great. He's just really a great presence. He's been in tons and tons of stuff. And then you mentioned more recently, you know, his Rob Zombie, turn of pictures like what, Lords of Salem and all those different things, right? He's been in tons and tons of pictures like this, right? He was in Kill Bill. I think one of the ones recently that probably is the one he's most famous for, where he does his most convention appearances now, is probably for The Devil's Rejects, where he plays Captain Spaulding, right? I mean, crazy, crazy movie that Rob did, but it's just got a massive cult following, right? And Sid's, you know, front and center in that stuff. So he's all over the place, but really great. Phenomenal. I love Westerns, and there aren't very many good ones made at all anymore, but there's a really terrific Kurt Russell Western called Bone Tomahawk that Sid's in. And if you have not seen it, run, don't walk. Super disturbing. Makes it really hard to go to sleep. Which is what you always think of with a Sid Haig movie, right? But yeah, just really, really cool.
Awesome. Well, happy birthday. Sid would have had the birthday on July 14th, 1939 he was born.
You guys want to talk to a fan?
Sure.
We have a fan on the line who might want to talk about Sid. I'm not sure. But let me see if the gremlins are worked out on my thing, because sometimes it doesn't want to cooperate. So let's see what happens here. Hey, good evening. Thank you for calling Trek Talking. What's your name and where are you calling us from tonight?
Kabla, my brothers. This is Ray.
Ray,
hey,
what's
Ray.
Up, brother?
Hey.
Yo, how you guys doing today?
We're doing great. How are you doing, Ray?
I'm fine, but you know what happened, Ray? I'm going to say something to you because I'm watching right now, but your man over there, just do my supplies. I want to teach you hooker right now. No, teach you hooker.
Oh, TJ Hooker.
I found Amazon like last week.
TJ Hooker.
TJ Hooker, you know, real shit ass cop.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I found Amazon like last week.
And you watched all of it?
Right now I'm watching the last season 5 right now.
Whoa.
Wow.
Clown.
You're dedicated, right?
No, my brother, I'm telling you, I went to Amazon like the other day, right? Like last week, right? And it was a piece two on DVD for about like $49. Man, I grabbed that joint so fast, you don't know. I'm on the phone. Guys, I was saying, don't you know how long it took me to watch all five seasons of this joint? And it took like a week and a half.
Wow.
That's a lot of TV watching, man.
No, I'm out of school right now, so I'm on release right now until September. So what I did was I ordered a lot of stuff at Amazon, Peter Hooker and G.I. Joe and Transformers, those, keep myself busy. I'm not working right now. I'm not working right now. So keep my mind occupied while I'm going ballistic.
Can you help me before you do what you're doing?
I'm going to pass.
Thanks for calling,
buddy. All right, we'll talk to you later, Ray.
Thanks,
hey,
dude.
Good luck when the Mets play the Yankees next week. We'll see who comes out on top in that one.
Yeah, bring it up. All right, you know what? I'm not going to say a word right now. I'm going to keep it to myself. I'm going to keep it to myself.
We'll see what happens.
You know what I'm saying? Right. Like I said, I got to go. You know what I'm saying? You take care of you guys. I'll call guys next week. Kapla, my brothers. Kapla.
All right. Have a great night, Ray. Thanks for calling. Kapla. All right, guys. That was Ray from the Bronx.
I think we need to make a disclaimer, Jim. Jim, we need to make a disclaimer.
A disclaimer?
Yeah. Trek Talking is in no way responsible for the marital difficulties or divorces of anyone who may call into the show. calling into the show does entail by itself an act of involuntary risk that you assume by being willing to talk. Anything that occurs in your house that ends up being detrimental to you or your in-house relationships is no fault of the staff or participants.
Or broadcast
of
on the air. Yeah.
Podcast on the air. Yeah. Podcast constantly. Okay, there we got that out of the way now. We're okay.
And you say, yes, dear. That's the correct response. Yes, dear.
Oh, dear. We're going to be in trouble for that.
You can continue on.
All right.
I don't know how you're going to follow that up, but you're going to
it's okay because I feel like the remembrance portion of this show is like an exercise not only in solemnity but also in celebration. So I feel like I can do both. So we're just going to move right on to Ken Lynch, who would have had a birthday this week. He played Vanderberg in the original series season episode The Devil in the Dark, one of those really, really good classic episodes from TOS. This role was one of some 200 other television appearances that he made throughout his career, perhaps best known for his role as Police Sergeant Grover in the TV series MacLeod from 1972 through 1977. He was also part of the extensive cast of the 1983 miniseries The Winds of War, made appearances in lots of cool movies, Run Silent, Run Deep, Anatomy of a Murder, North by Northwest, Tora, 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 are you kidding me? Character actor Ken Lynch all over the place, particularly throughout the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Happy birthday and lots of love and remembrances going out to actor Ken Lynch. Also, remembering this week, Nan Martin. Nan Martin was the American actress who portrayed Victoria Miller in the Next Generation first season episode, Haven. She also voiced the character of Admiral Tsubar in the Captain Sulu Adventures story, Envoy. Martin received a Tony Award nomination for her performance in the 1958 through 1959 Broadway play, JB, which she worked with, guess who? Christopher Plummer, General Chang himself. On television, Martin was best known perhaps for her recurring role as Mrs. Louder on the television comedy series The Drew Carey Show. And when it comes to film, some people consider her most notable role to be that of Mrs. Ben Patimkin in the 1969 Paramount Pictures romantic comedy Goodbye, Columbus. She's got a little Freddy connection too, Jim. I know you love this. She plays Amanda Krueger, the mother of Freddy Krueger in the 1987 horror movie Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors. So Nan Martin.
That's awesome.
Crossing all sorts of genres. Happy birthday and lots of love and remembrances going out to Nan Martin. Also, happy birthday to Philip Pine, actor lost way back in 2006, but he was born in 1920, so he did live to be 86 years old. He was the actor who portrayed Philip Green in the original series, third season episode, The Savage Curtain, another classic. 183 acting credits on IMDb. A very storied actor all over the place. He's guest starred in all sorts of television like Adventures of Superman, Gunsmoke, The Untouchables, Twilight Zone. So I was like, where do I start with this guy? So I went with other Star Trek connections. So Philip Pine played the brother of Leonard Nimoy's character in a 1959 episode of Wagon Train called The Esteban Zamora Story. So there's one. He also co-starred with James Doohan, I think you know that name, in a 1951 episode of Tales of Tomorrow and a 1963 episode of Bonanza. He also worked with William Shatner and Yvonne Craig in a 1973 episode of Mannix. So lots of little connections. There's a Mark Leonard connection in there, too. Philip Pine would have had a birthday on July 16th, born 1920. Happy birthday and remembrances going out to Philip Pine. And our last remembrance this week, guys, goes out to Camille Saviola, who, of course, played Kai Opaka, one of the good ones, in four episodes of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Kai Opaka, just one of those characters, you just when she's gone, I'm not going to tell you how she's gone, but when she's gone, you're just sort of heartbroken. She graduated from the prestigious High School of Music and Art in Manhattan, dropped out of college after a year in order to learn acting. She used to be in a female rock band back in the 70s called the Margot Lewis Explosion, which I just love that. Her Broadway credits include the part of Mema Maddalena in the original production of Nine and Matron Mama Morton in the revival of Chicago. So Chicago is just such a great show, and I can totally see her in that role. Love it. She was in a bunch of Woody Allen movies, and she has some sitcom and other appearances throughout the rest of her career. But as Kai Opaka, I just love her so much. When she grabs Sisko's ear and tells him what's up with his pa, I just get goosebumps every time. So happy birthday, and lots in love of love going out to Camille Saviola. And that, you guys, does it for our Remembrances Week. So I'm going to pass this flaming birthday candle over to Charles. Who you got, Charles?
Okay, thank you. Let's start off with Terry O'Quinn, who appeared as Admiral Eric Pressman in Star Trek's Next Generation 7th season episode, The Pegasus. Good or bad, Admiral Eric?
He's that one that ends up right on the line for me because I believe that he's got good intentions, but he makes bad decisions. So I put him right on the line between good and bad.
Interesting that he also played a captain and eventually an admiral on JAG. He also appeared as a character in the series Lost. That one of our birthday boys last week, J.J. Abrams, was working on. Happy birthday to Catherine Trowell, who played Captain Bondra in Star Trek Discovery third season episode Scavengers and fourth season episode Anomaly. Margaret Rose, actress, composer, and musician who played Elaine in Star Trek's Next Generation fifth season episode The Inner Light. And Kapar Rin in Star Trek's Deep Space Nine episode Hard Time. A couple of movies I thought was good. She appeared in 48 Hours and Brewster's Millions. To Eugene Cordero, American actor, writer, and producer, who voices Ensign Sam Rutherford in Star Trek's Lower Decks.
I love Rutherford.
Yes. Oh, can't wait for our Lower Decks crew to come back.
What the fur?
Happy birthday to R.J. Williams, child actor who portrayed Ian Troy in Star Trek Next Generation, the second season episode, The Child, who is the founder of a digital video platform, Young Hollywood. The company creates, distributes celebrity and lifestyle programs globally, owns several different leading entertainment brands, and licenses the Young Hollywood trademark internationally for a range of consumer products and services. So decided to go out of acting and got into the industry. And my last one, which I'm sure everybody can come up with all kinds of roles he's done, a definite happy birthday to Benedict Cumberbatch, English actor who played Khan Noonien Singh, a.k.a. John Harrison in Star Trek Into Darkness, with well-known roles as Sherlock and Doctor Strange. Anyone going to comment on Benedict?
Yeah, didn't he voice the dragon in The Lord of the Rings, too?
He yes. did.
Smog.
Yeah, Smog.
He did.
Yeah. In the Hobbit yep. movies.
Yeah, in The Hobbit, he was the dragon Smog.
Yes, he was.
I really liked him in the Sherlock shows that he did. Those yeah. were fun.
Yeah, those
I think
are
he did
pretty
a good,
good shows.
He did a good job with those. Well, if there are no more comments, then I'm going to pass the flaming candle over to Paul.
Thanks, Charles. Appreciate it, man. First of all, happy birthday to actor Tom Troop, who portrayed Lieutenant Harold in the original series first season episode, Arena. And I have a hunch we're going to be talking about a lot in a couple weeks. Just a hunch. But yeah, a lot of folks did not make it out of that episode, just as memory serves. But Tom Troop, you're in a classic, man, one of the icons from day
one. Was he the one that played the Gorn?
I don't think so. I think he played Lieutenant Harold. Unless oh, okay. Lieutenant Harold was a Gorn, and I was like, you know, I missed that. I mean, that's possible, but, you know, us old guys, we forget a lot. You know what I'm saying, David? But moving on, also from the original series group, but in the movie aspect of the universe, it's birthday time for Judson Scott, who played Joachim in Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. And if that's not enough, big Star Trek fan himself, moved on to appear in Next Gen's episode Symbiosis. And here's where the worlds collide and the streams cross in crazy ways. Because in Symbiosis, whoa, he was there with his Wrath of Khan co-star, Merrick Buttrick. How about that? So all kinds of, it's like, hey, man, my agent got me a job on both. Let's do it. Plus, on Voyager, Judson Scott had another role. He played Commander Rickar in Voyager episode Message in a Bottle. So that's a triple threat. Not a lot of actors can say they were in three different aspects of the Star Trek universe, but Judson Scott can say it proudly. So pretty cool thing to be able to claim on your resume. A lot of 8x10s happening when convention season kicks up again once the strike is over. More on that later. I'd like to also say happy birthday to Osric Chow, who played Oros in the Discovery fourth season episode, The Galactic Barrier. Excellent stuff there. Happy birthday as well to Caroline Junko King. She's the actress who played the young Keiko O'Brien in the Next Generation sixth season episode, Rascals. We were just talking about that last week. Easy to dismiss, but a really good episode. Very entertaining and well done. And all the actors who played the characters as kids did a really spectacular job. And I remembering Caroline Junko King's performance as young Keiko in particularly as one that was very compelling and convincing. So good work. And finally for me, we're going to pay happy birthday respects to voice actor and comedian Carlos Jaime Alazraki. Sorry, Alazraki. It's been a long week, Carlos. Apologies. He voiced Vice Admiral Les Buenamigo in the third season of Star Trek Lower Decks. I just love that that's
such a great name. Best Admiral name ever.
But Vice Admiral Buenamigo, is everything going to be okay? Why, yes, it is, he said reassuringly. don't question
evil,
your commanding officer.
Evil.
Just go with it. It will be fine. He's just... really, really, you think? He says, comedian, you think? His line delivery is just great. So I'm going to have to seek out Carlos Alazraki's comedy work and check it out, because if you could be that funny doing that kind of character, I want to see what else you're doing, Carlos. So happy birthday, brother. I hope you're having a great time and enjoying celebrating yourself, which is what birthdays are all about. I'm going to pass it over to Jim, who's over in the corner sharpening his bat less.
Well, unfortunately, I have no Klingons this week, but we want to wish a very, very happy birthday. We want to wish a very, very happy birthday to Hannah Hattate, who played Molly O'Brien in Star Trek The Next Generation 6th season episode, Rascal. There it is again, Rascal. And she would go on to Deep Space Nine to play Molly in 11 episodes. So that is pretty cool. We also want to say happy birthday to Rosa Salazar, who is a Canadian-born American actress who appeared as Captain Lynn Lasarno in Star Trek Short Trek's episode, Trouble with Edward. He was an idiot. I love that episode. It starts off with Captain Pike, if you guys don't remember. And to this, to my knowledge, as far as I know, it's the only Star Trek episode that has an after credit scene. And if you haven't watched it, you want to go find it. It's really funny. Speaking of horror movies and Nightmare on Elm Street, we want to say happy birthday to Heather Langenkamp, who everybody knows as Nancy from Nightmare on Elm Street. But we're talking about her Star Trek role. She kind of did a Mick Fleetwood on us. And she played the role of Mato, an alien Starfleet security officer in Star Trek Into Darkness. She was like a giant frog. You wouldn't even know it was her unless you knew it was her. But that's because her and her husband were the makeup people on that movie. So that's pretty neat. And the last birthday that I have on my list before we get some really, really interesting Star Trek news is we want to say happy birthday to Megal Sandhu, the actress and model who played Angela Martine in Star Trek Strange New Worlds 1st season episode, Equality of Mercy. And that wraps up our Star Trek birthdays, and it's time for Star Trek.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Incoming transmission.
Enter authorization code. Command codes verified. Define parameters of program. Level 9 authorization required.
Specify parameters.
Transfer of data is complete.
Blank alert. Blank alert.
Okay, Paul, you get to kick us off this week.
All right, man. Well, I'll tell you what, this is definitely a topic that is in no short supply of folks who are checking it out and talking about it these days, because it's impacting a lot of folks. All I'm going to say to kick us off is that anyone who's anti-union is selling something. Actors' strike set to impact Star Trek production and promotion, including summer conventions. Because, friends, after extended negotiations failed to come up with a new agreement, the SAG-AFTRA Union of Actors has called a strike against the Hollywood studios for work related to television and film. This is the first general actors' strike in decades. Now, Star Trek is already being represented, including Picard star Michelle Hurd, who is also on the SAG negotiating committee. This double strike is historic because it is the first time both SAG and WGA, the Writers Guild of America, have been on strike at the same time. Since even before my time of dinosaurs walking the earth, it's been back in 1960. So it's been a long, long time, friends, since we've had both guilds out at the same time. It's going to have a big impact on the industry in terms of both productions and how previously filmed projects end up being promoted. Now, a lot of specifics are still being sorted out. There are already immediate implications that are going to impact Star Trek in a big way. The most obvious impact of the double strike will be on the live-action production of anything Star Trek. Currently, I know it's amazing, but it's still great to celebrate. There are three different upcoming live Star Trek live action projects that have yet to go into production, including the third season of Strange New Worlds. There's a Section 31 streaming movie and the first season of the new Starfleet Academy series. Now, before the strikes, Strange New Worlds Season 3 was set in to go into production this summer. And they'd probably be shooting right now. The Section 31 movie was scheduled for the fall, and the Starfleet Academy show was going to start filming in early next year, in 2024. The fifth and final season of Discovery has already finished production, for release later in 2024. And this may be the only live-action Star Trek content for the year. Think about that. In addition to working on new film and television projects, the SAG strike also disallows any promotion or publicity for previously completed film and television projects. That's a big one. Seriously. Seriously. I feel it's important to even say it again. Disallows any promotion or publicity for previously completed film or television projects. There's no milk carton date on that, pals, including promotional events, panels, and more, including interviews. So if it's a movie you made back in 1960 when you were in SAG, you can't talk about it, right? You can't promote or do a publicity event for it. The Ready Room with Will Wheaton has been banking interviews well in advance, so they can keep that show rolling through the rest of the season because they've got a backlog. But actors not even allowed to do promotions on social media, right? Star Trek actors from both the new shows as well as legacy shows are lined up to attend fan conventions all summer long. Las Vegas, Star Trek Las Vegas, set for the first weekend of August. This is just days away, peeps. Photo ops and autographs are still allowed under SAG rules, as they are considered personal appearances. However, and this is a big however, friends, right? Panel appearances will likely be impacted by the strike. Okay, so, and this is something that we just can't really put enough emphasis on, right? It's clear that actors for upcoming projects cannot promote them on a panel. However, that doesn't preclude them attending the convention and even potentially appearing on a panel as long as certain topics are avoided. But let's be clear, right? People at a convention want to interact with the actors, and they want to talk to them about their work. They want to say why they like them. I loved you in that scene on whatever, right? And it was just this morning I read that Luminary herself, Kate Mulgrew, Captain Janeway, just pulled out of Star Trek Las Vegas because it's almost like, what's the point? You know, you can only bring your own like generic 8x10 glossies to get signed. You can't bring a photo of yourself as Janeway. You can't engage in any conversations about, you know, anything that you did as Janeway, as the character or Prodigy or anything like that. No, you can't do it. So it's just too frustrating, too problematic. I don't think anyone wants the risk, especially, you know, it's a very litigious world we live in. Nobody wants to be sued, right? And nobody wants to offend or piss off SAG-AFTRA. You don't want to get in trouble with the union. You just don't, because it's your livelihood. So is it annoying for folks? Absolutely. But it's the glue that holds the industry together, and actors and writers very, very, very seldom get paid what they're worth. We hear all the time, oh, this actor, Tom Cruise is making however many millions of dollars for Mission Impossible. Oh, actors all get paid too much. Bullshit. Okay, most actors are barely able to afford to make rent, right? It's just terrible, and they very seldom get the benefits they need, the medical insurance. It's an extremely difficult industry, and a lot of times actors and writers have to, like, bang on the door and insist that they be paid because the studios don't want to pay them what they're worth. And so this is way overdue. It may last for a while because, you know, the studios and the producers are notorious for not wanting to give up a little bit of their giant bonuses. Sorry, Bob Iger, but you're kind of at fault for a lot of this stuff. And these are the people that are making these shows happen. There is no script without a writer. There's no character without an actor. And so I think it's hugely important that these folks are paid what they're worth.
and that the in the climate where a lot of big pocketed special interest groups are trying to dismantle unions and guilds in the 21st century, it's important that we support them and believe in them and honor their work and be as patient as it takes as long as they get a good deal. And that's my two cents thrown on top of that story. Anyone else want to add to the topic?
Yeah,
we move
definitely.
On?
Oh, definitely. Since I'm in Las Vegas, our club, USS Las Vegas, just had our meeting yesterday, and this was a definite hot topic with that, and we've gotten more details. I've actually talked to a person who represents Robbie Duncan McNeil. He is back down. He does not want to he is doing a lot of production right now, producer, and doesn't want that conflict. When they talked about the autographs, if the actor brings their own pictures, it is a headshot. They cannot be in any kind of character role. Fans can bring in their own pictures, but they cannot write down the character name on the picture. They cannot say a quote of the character. You cannot have Picard doing engage because that's one of his lines. He cannot write down a picture. So panels are going to be very interesting this year at that convention.
Who wants to deal with that, though, man? I don't think that,
I know.
It's just a pain.
Yeah. Well, I know they're scheduled a big, we call legacy panel that a special Goldfeet member or paid to go Saturday night of basically many of the Picard actors. And I'm still questioning if that one's even going to happen, because these actors will be doing panels on their own panel sometime during the weekend, and they will not be able to promote Picard at all. I'm not sure it's going to be a big conversation, what everybody's up to in their personal lives. In fact, if anybody's going to Star Trek Las Vegas, you can find me. You'll probably see me in uniform on Saturday. I don't know about Sunday. Find me at the USS Las Vegas table. We're going to be, I believe, right near the Federation. And I will be helping out monitoring the table for the week, Saturday and Sunday, since I'm busy working Thursday and Friday. But we're waiting to see what news happens with this convention. I know of at least four or five people who pulled out already. And that's just in a couple of days. I'm sure it's going to get even bigger. And so it's going to be interesting to see what happens at the convention. They still want to keep it going. It's going to be a bit. You wonder how many people are going to cancel out or try to skip the convention just because it's not going to be the convention they're used to.
You know, the good news is if the early indications are any clue, it doesn't seem like it's dampening a lot of the enthusiasm for San Diego Comic-Con, right? I mean, I think that, you know, the truth of that will come tomorrow, because it's like a lot of times it's all product related, right? And so if the actors can't be there, I think what you're going to see is you're going to see the production people coming out and showing as much footage or ancillary products like toys as they can, right? But it's a sticky thing, because a lot of people don't want to do it because they don't want to cross their friends or piss them off, because they want to support the strike. They want to be seen as a strike breaker. So it's really rough.
And
it's a tough situation for everyone.
And the different thing is Star Trek Las Vegas, because we lost the license for Star Trek, and why they call it year 58 is because the license went to someone else, and so we're not an official convention. Whereas San Diego is an official convention, and that is one that the actors are banned from doing it because it's studio promoted. So that is why the actors are not able to go to San Diego. San Diego should be interesting because we're going to have a panel on three active series, and I'm waiting to see if there are going to be dates on series. I've noticed we've got a possible production start date for Section 31, and that's probably going to be iffy if the contracting clears up by then. But San Diego is going to be interesting. Then I'm going to wait and see what happens with Las Vegas.
So I actually got a couple questions about this strike that's been going on. Just for the sake of knowledge that maybe some Star Trek fans might not know, but what can anyone tell me what the SAG rule is?
What do you mean the SAG rule?
Well, what does that mean? Like, why can't they do anything? What is the SAG rule? I'm just trying to figure out what that is.
I would recommend any fan looking at it to go online because there's a couple of paragraphs in it. But there's a actual, if you go on strike, here are the things you can and cannot do.
Yeah. Basically, like in a nutshell, right? It's the idea of like maintaining solidarity, integrity during a labor situation, right? And if you're going on strike, right, it means you can't work. You can't get in front of the cameras. You can't shoot. You can't do the craft of acting. Right, because of the labor stoppage, right? But in this situation, it's the language is really complicated, right, for all these type of situations, right? It's all very legalistic. But part of what they define as acting is stuff that you're doing in support of said acting, right? Basically, they see it as like, you know, anything promotional, anything going on a talk show, you know, even like, you know, stuff you would never think of. Like, here's a picture of me when I played Captain Kirk 40 years ago. You know, they consider that, you know, related to your work. It's all about doing stuff that's related to your work. You're not really supposed to do anything related to your work during a labor dispute. And so that's what it's all about. So that casts a super wide net. There's a few lucky folks who are voice actors who are not subject to this, right? And do some voice actor work. But it's all little subparagraphs and asterisks and exceptions. And it's just it's a train wreck. But, Robert Duvall said in The Godfather, it's been a long time since we've had something like this happen. You know, a lot of bad blood over the years, but you got to have this every now and then. You know, it's just got to happen to help settle things out. So it's the same kind of thing. You know, it's just nobody wants it, but you know, you can't treat people unfairly, especially when the top dogs at the top of the table are making so much money. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, we've been hearing for the last few years, David, right? I mean, everywhere here in Portland, especially, we hear about a lot, right? How there's a huge abyss between the haves and the have nots, right?
You know,
you have people who are, you know, barely able to pay rent, you know, and have any, you know, kind of extravagance, you know, and your salary every year is really, really low. Right. And then, you know, the guy sitting at top, a guy like, you know, head of Disney, right, is making, you know, ridiculous bonuses of millions of dollars and billions of dollars. And it's just the lack of inequity. Eventually it's going to lead to some kind of social upheaval because people are just sick of it. Right.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of guys making a ton of money in Hollywood, and it's preposterous for them to resent those who just want their fair share, you know, and poo-poo the creative. So that's kind of what it all boils down to, man. So it's just, hopefully, you know, I'm a believer in common sense and dignity and ethics, and hopefully it'll all get resolved by fall, right? I think it'll be hopefully sorted out by, you know, end of September would be, I think, you know, but I don't think anyone's going to buckle. At least I don't think anybody in the guilds are going to buckle.
Okay,
right.
So was this also brought up because of the AI situation? Could I
yes.
ask something about the
yeah.
AI?
Yeah,
that's a lot
yeah.
of it, dude.
It's
a real threat.
I was about to tell you. I was talking with Leslie, and something that a lot of people are not aware of is that in order to receive your benefits from the Screen Actors Guild, you know, your health insurance, you have to earn a certain amount of money a year, or you're disqualified and you don't have insurance. Well, the Screen Actors Guild does not include residual salary. So unless you're filming, you know, actively currently, you have no insurance. Let's say you make a number one movie. You're in Titanic, whatever. And you're getting $10,000 a month on residuals for this movie. That doesn't count as a salary because it's a residual. So that they wanted to change that so that residuals are counted as a salary so you can be insured. That's a big thing. Streaming is another huge issue here because the actors don't get paid residuals on streaming like they do on broadcast TV, like Nightmare on Elm Street. Leslie was in Nightmare on Elm Street. Every time Nightmare on Elm Street airs on television somewhere, Leslie knows about it because she'll get these residual checks in the mail. That doesn't work for streaming. That's a new concept that isn't included. And then, of course, you got the AI. And AI, they don't want AI to take them over because right now they could, make a movie with an AI version of you and not have to pay you. There's some other smaller ones, but those are the big ones.
Well, on the streaming issue, I'll give an example that an actor was due residuals on how much money based on how much the movie would make in the theater. Well, said movie got released to the theater and streaming at the same time. Well, those residuals were based strictly on theater numbers only. So all the fans that were watching on streaming on the big network, or the big streaming service, the actor wasn't seeing anything in connection with that. And so that's part of the streaming issue is also the fact is when they release these big movies and they double dip into streaming as well as theater, how much is it going basically to the production only and not the cast?
And you know what's interesting, Charles, is a lot of these issues cross over into the Writers Guild as well, like the AI for writers, residuals for writers, and streaming for writers. They're all on strike for the same basic ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's impacting things, and it just keeps unfolding, right? I mean, I just read this afternoon, right, is now, and we didn't even think this. You think that, a picture that's already in the can, what do you got to worry about, right? But Warner Brothers is thinking about bumping, Dune 2 over to 24. Right? Because it's like, how do you promote the movie if you don't have your cast, right? And they can't say anything about it. You want to have solidarity. So a lot of movies that were in the hopper were going to be, guaranteed, winter holiday releases, they may get delayed to next year unless contracts can be resolved. So there's a lot of date shuffling and all these things we didn't even think about at all that are now becoming clear. And, if you lose, the holiday season box office revenue, that's billions of dollars to Hollywood, right? That's a huge deal, right? Hmm. You bump your movie to February, you're not going to make as much money. It's just not going to happen, It's just not. So it behooves them all to do the right thing and to settle this thing promptly and have some dignity, right? Because I'm telling you, there's a lot of people suffer. And then we should probably stop because I know we still have a lot of news stories in 12 minutes to get through them. But I just think everyone should just do the right thing.
I also wanted to point out something, Paul. How stupid, how idiotic does Paramount Plus look right now when they had 20 episodes of Prodigy in the can and they chose to throw it away?
Yeah, they could. They have all that content just waiting to be aired. That was legit to go, but no. Yeah,
it's an excellent point. In the app, they could have had Lower Decks for 10 weeks, and then Prodigy for 20, and gotten through the strike and into next year. But they were idiots, and they canceled a 20-episode show that was finished. an animated
bad timing
and just a bad call, because I mean I think we're seeing that, you know, people are coming out all over the place and going, this show is beloved, what the hell did you do? And it's certainly, you know, people are getting their hands on you know, the physical media copies as much as they can, because people are curious, they want to see it, and people who didn't get to see it when it streamed are, you know, pretty pissed off. They're like, you know, like,
yeah,
we wanted to, you know, we want to see this. We should continue on though, because this is such a big topic.
Yeah, well, and I just want to let everybody know that we only have 10 minutes left, so any of the stories that I had promoted for this week, just like we did before, I thought it was important to talk about the strike. We'll just bump those stories up to next week, so you'll still get the full stories anyways. But, David, you want to jump in here?
On this topic of the strike?
The next news story.
Oh.
Yeah, the next news story.
All right. Well, cool. So Star Trek Strange New World warps into streaming top 10 charts. Following the footsteps of Star Trek Picard, the new season of Strange New World is proving popular for Paramount Plus, arriving on the Nielsen Top 10. Star Trek Strange New World Season 2 premiere, The Broken Circle, debuts on the chart for original streaming shows at number 7 with 338 million minutes viewed, Nielsen metric for streaming. This is the first Paramount Plus original to appear on the chart since May, when the season 3 finale of Star Trek Picard came in 9th place with 400 million minutes viewed. That was actually the third time for Picard's third season on the Nielsen chart. Earlier in the year, shortly after Nielsen began tracking Paramount Plus shows, without Nielsen data from the first season of Strange New World, it's hard to draw comparison. However, last summer, Paramount Plus revealed Season 1 had the strongest performance of any original Star Trek show to date. Whoa. That's a lot. All right, so I guess we're going to continue on our next topic. Charles, what do you have for us?
Okay, well, 3 Star Trek novels nominated for the Scribe Awards. The International Association of Media Tie-In Writers announced nominees for their annual Scribe Award, which acknowledges and celebrates excellence in licensed tie-in work based on TV shows, movies, and games. This year, Star Trek picked up 3 nominations across 2 categories, with a TOS book and A Strange New World recognized in both in Best Novel category and a project book for Best Young Adult Middle Grade Novel. In the Best Original Novel Speculative category, both Star Trek Strange New World High Country by John Jackson Miller and Star Trek Original Series Harm's Way by David Mack were nominated. Star Trek Prodigies, A Dangerous Trade, written by Cassandra Rose Clark, was nominated for Best Young Adult Middle Grade Novel. This has been a good year for Trek tie-ins, as IDW Comics was recently nominated for 2 Eisner Awards, which is considered the most prestigious honor for comics. Star Trek 400, edited by Heather Antos, is nominated for a Best Single Issue One-Shot, and the ongoing series, written by Colin Kelly and Jackson Lazing, with art by Raymond Rosanis, was nominated for Best New Series. Really a good time to catch up on the books. The Star Trek Strange, the High Country, which we've discussed. Personally, I do like the Prodigy books. And, of course, we love the comic sets. So, do we want to squeeze in Eric's story?
I think we could squeeze it in.
Go for it, Eric.
Yeah, Star Trek Picard and Lower Decks both nominated for 8 Hollywood Critics Association Awards. The third seasons of Star Trek Picard and Lower Decks got a big boost with the announcement of 8 nominations from the Hollywood Critics Association. Picard picked up 7, including nominations for Patrick Stewart, Jerry Ryan, Brent Spiner, Michelle Forbes and Terry Metalis. Hollywood Critic Association announced nominees for their third annual HCA TV Awards, with Picard dominating across the streaming drama categories with a total of 7 nominations. This includes a nomination for Best Streaming Drama Series. Picard stars Sir Patrick Stewart, and he was nominated for Best Actor in a Streaming Drama Series. Brent Spiner was nominated for Best Supporting Actor in a Streaming Drama Series, and Jeri Ryan was nominated for Best Supporting Actress in a Streaming Drama Series. Michelle Forbes is nominated for Best Guest Actress in a Drama Series for the Picard episode Imposters. Picard Season 3 showrunner Terry Metalis picked up nominations for Best Writing in a Streaming Drama Series and for Best Directing in a Streaming Drama Series, both for the season finale, The Last Generation. For the second year in a row, Star Trek Lower Decks was nominated for Best Streaming Animated Series or TV Movie for its third season. So lots and lots of awards coming out for all this new Star Trek stuff. In particular, you know, I think it's kind of fun to see Picard's season 3 coming back after the season 2 kind of lull. You know, people love season 3, got lots of awards. And also seeing Lower Decks nominated for all the awards, I think it deserves, honestly, one of the best Star Trek shows out there, in my opinion. Jim, we got 4 minutes. I bet you can squeeze one more in.
Star Trek Picard Firewall explored Seven of Nine's post-Voyager life. Seven of Nine's journey from Voyager to Picard is set to be explored in author David Mack's latest novel, Star Trek Picard Firewall. One of the biggest loose ends that weren't explored entering Star Trek Picard was what happens with Seven of Nine in the aftermath for time on Voyager, other than what was mentioned in passing. Author David Mack is hoping to fill some of those gaps in his latest novel, Star Trek Picard Firewall. The prequel Firewall takes place 2 years after the USS Voyager returned from the Delta Quadrant, as Seven of Nine finds herself rejected for a position in Starfleet and instead finds a new home with the Interstellar Rogue Law Enforcement Corp known as the Fenris Rangers. Star Trek Firewall comes to bookstores courtesy of Simon & Schuster in February of 24 and is available for pre-order. Paul, do you think you can finish up with our last story?
Absolutely, because this is an important one. Star Trek Picard, the final season, warps out of home video with exclusives and extras. After a moderately satisfying but slightly polarizing third and last season, Paramount Plus's Star Trek Picard, the final season, who wrote this, is beaming directly onto home video with its Blu-ray DVD and limited edition Blu-ray Steelbook release on September 5th. Star Trek Picard, the final season, soon launching on home video, is packed with a voluminous amount of exclusive bonus material and features such as never-seen footage and revealing audio commentaries on certain episodes, a blooper reel, deleted scenes, featurettes exploring Picard's creation, and the grand rebuilding of the Starship Enterprise-D, and an illuminating Q&A panel discussion with key members of the series cast and crew, obviously filmed before the strike. September 5th, 2023, Paramount Home Entertainment will deliver Star Trek Picard, the complete series, which will be loaded all 3 seasons of Picard, and over 7 hours of bonus features. Then, if that's still not enough Picard to satiate you fans, the 54-disc Blu-ray behemoth called Star Trek the Picard Legacy Collection arrives on October 17th, stuffed with 7 seasons of Star Trek The Next Generation, remastered editions of Star Trek Generations, Star Trek First Contact, Star Trek Insurrection, and Star Trek Nemesis, and all 3 seasons of Star Trek Picard. Woo! We make it so. One final word, Paramount. You've been making some weird calls here lately, and you cannot just release Picard's third season on Blu-ray. That is absolute insanity. That is a 4K season if there ever was so. It's a 10-hour movie. It is amazing. That's a shooting yourself in the foot maneuver yet again. 4K that. You've got it. It's no more expensive to produce it. You know it. We know it. And the fans who insist on physical media know it. End of rant. 4K or die.
Whew, fast forward, guys.
Well, we got it all in there, guys. Can you believe it?
Now, listen to the whole thing again.
we did it. We did it. Well, before we really have to say goodbye, I want to take an opportunity to say thank you to David for hanging out and Trek talking with us, even though he forgot the donuts and he drank homemade water. Thank you so much, David.
It was so good. Homemade water, but yeah. Thanks for having me on the show.
And thank you so much to Paul for hanging out and Trek talking with us tonight. Thank you, Paul.
My pleasure, man. A lot of fun this week. A lot of fun.
Yeah, and we're going to have a lot next week, too. And, of course, thank you so much to Eric for hanging out and Trek talking with us. Thank you, Eric.
Absolutely. Peace and long life to all of our listeners out there. Thank you guys so much.
And, of course, thank you to Charles for hanging out with us tonight. Thank you so much, Charles.
Thank you, as always.
And remember, guys, please stay safe and be good to each other out there. Star Trek fans are the best fans. You better believe it. Hailing frequencies are closed. Good night, everybody.
Good night, all.
Good night, all. Have fun.
Let's see what's out there. Engage.